Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
BangTheBook.com.
Well, what's good, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, January 23rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here to kick off another week of programming on Bang the Book Radio. We'll be joined in a little while here today by Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com. We'll have our Handicapping the Hardwood segment with him. No Joe Everett on today's show. Unfortunately, Joe driving back from his busy weekend of working for NFL Draft Bible. So unable to get him on the program here today. Rest assured, we will get some Super Bowl 51 analysis from him on next week's show. I guess, you know, the thing to do right here is just sort of look at the week ahead then, because we've got some very exciting guests coming your way here. Coming up on Tuesday's show, should be back to our regular Tuesday meeting broadcast with Brian Leonard. Also, Sports Cheetah, our Hunting for Winners segment with him. Both of those guys, professional handicappers over at wagertalk.com. Should have a really special segment for you on Wednesday. I've been chatting with my buddy Matt Lindemann. Used to be on the odds team at the M Resort. Now he's transitioning over to being a full-time professional handicapper. So we'll get a chance to talk with him about the different sides of the counter, because they are both very, very different. Get some of his thoughts on life in Vegas and all that type of thing. That should be coming up here on our Wednesday show. Also, Wednesday wagering with Wes Reynolds. We'll look at the early line for Super Bowl 51. Also take a look at the Farmers Insurance Open this week at Torrey Pines. Huge field for that. All the superstars and the heavy hitters going to be teeing it up out there in California. So really looking forward to chatting about that event with him. Thursday's show, Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Also Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. We'll chat college basketball, NFL, of course, the Super Bowl look-ahead lines and all that type of thing. I guess they're not even look-ahead lines anymore, because we're just about 2 weeks away from Super Bowl 51, which is kind of amazing. It's really amazing how time flies in this industry. But Friday's show, Rob Pizzola of Prediction Machine will join us once again. And then also the odds, or no version of the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Excuse me. He's got some things going on here this week. Should get one of our college basketball writers from Rush the Court to join the show. I think that's something that we'll be able to do here on our Friday broadcast. But we'll kind of play it by ear, you know, obviously with football being done here and football certainly being the thing that drives the bus in this industry. It'll be kind of touch and go in terms of finding guests that aren't regulars for the broadcast here as we move throughout the month of January. But I just want to give you a look ahead so that you can prepare for what's going to be coming your way here this week. I promise we'll cover Super Bowl 51 from every angle on this show. We always talk about prop bets. We love to chat about the props. There's so many wagering options available for the Super Bowl, particularly with those prop bets. I think that's a much better way to bet the game. I'll talk about some of those strategies both here on the show and then also over at bangthebook.com. Did put up my Super Bowl 51 preview this morning, so you can go and check that out. We'll have prop stuff as we go, you know, throughout this week, and then certainly in the next week as we get more of those options available, some of the cross-sport props, the novelty props, all that type of stuff. You'll have all those things out there for you over at bangthebook.com. Speaking of over at bangthebook.com, my situational betting articles, both of those posted, I don't even remember if I did them late Saturday or early Sunday, but both of those are up over there at bangthebook.com. And again, you know, you're in this point of the year, the calendar year, where because football takes a back seat for a couple of weeks, at least from a handicapping standpoint, because, you know, Super Bowl 51, a standalone game, people will unload on that across the props and across the spread and total markets, but not really something that a lot of players are going to bother with here over the next few days. So what's going to happen is we're going to see a lot more public action in some of those other markets, talking about the NBA, college basketball, even a little bit more in the NHL. So those situational spot articles, I do NBA and NHL. Kyle Hunter, today's guest, does a college basketball one. Those are really, really good starting points for you. Now, not all of those are going to be plays. The lines still have to shake out. The situational spots still have to come together. But they're a good guide for you to start narrowing your focus with the card. I mean, think about it. We've got six NHL games here tonight. I believe there are 13 on Thursday because that's the final day before the NHL All-Star break. If you start on Wednesday night or Thursday morning looking at 13 NHL games, that's really, really difficult for you to do. But I think I isolated five or six of them in that situational betting article, which gives you a good starting point. It gives you some games to go ahead and look at and say, okay, Adam said that there's this spot. Adam said that there's this advantage. Am I comfortable with this line? Is this a line that I can play? Is this a bet that I feel like I could make? So that's really what the goal of those situational articles is to be able to give you a quality starting point to where you can look at a game. And the nice thing about it, too, is that when it comes to football, you're playing fantasy football. You know the players. You know the teams. There's only 32 teams in the NFL. There's 128 in Division I college football. Obviously, there's 30 in the NBA, but some people don't like the NBA all that much. Some people don't follow the NBA all that much. College basketball, there's 351 Division I teams. You're not going to know everybody. So the nice thing about these situational articles is that they give you some advantages without having to know all of the players, without having to know all the schemes that these teams run. You can make plays simply based on the schedule. And sometimes there's a lot of value in that. We had Philip Rostenreich a few weeks ago on the show from Orlando Magic Daily talking about the concept of a schedule loss. Teams talk about it. Beat writers talk about it. Players know about it. Sometimes players just aren't going to be as invested in a game. And that's what that situational betting article is intended to achieve, is to find those games for you so that you can take advantage of some of those lines that are out there in the betting market. And look, a lot of times these things are built into the numbers. Oddsmakers are not dumb. They don't make money month after month after month because oddsmakers don't pay attention to these things. But a lot of times those things are open to interpretation for the betting market to handle, and then the oddsmakers will adjust the numbers accordingly. Things are built in, but maybe they're not built in as much as some of those sharp segments of the market would expect. So that's when you tend to see some of those line moves on some of those situational spots. And those are really important things for you to learn and to understand as you try to get better as a handicapper. I think reading the market, knowing when to enter the market, those are two of the hardest things for a lot of people. We've had professional handicappers here on the show talk about trying to wait out a number and they wind up losing the best of the price, or entering the market and then misinterpreting what some of the other sharp segments of the market are going to do, and they wind up with a number that's a little bit less than optimal. So finding out when to get involved is something that's so, so important. And look, it may not seem that way to a lot of our listeners. If you're a novice handicapper, if you're somebody just getting involved in this industry, you may be looking at some of these things and saying, why does it matter if I don't get the best of the line? Why does it matter if it moves a half a point or a point? Well, obviously, there's the very obvious times when it matters, when a game loses by a point or a half point. But there are just certain things. Really, when it boils down to it, this is all about math. Yeah, the situational stuff is a little bit more objective, and certainly, that's something where there are some deviations. But when you talk about market entry, when you talk about break-even percentages, it's all about math. You want to get value in the numbers. And so that's why it's so important. We talked about that with Brent on one of our previous odds report segments of, discussing how they moved the juice just 5 cents or 10 cents or something like that. And what that means, why that matters. If it's the same number, if it's -3, why does it matter if it's -105 or -110? Well, when you're betting large amounts of money or you're looking at break-even percentages, that's when it matters. So all of this stuff is very, very important. We don't talk about it just to talk about it. It's all stuff to share with our listeners to help you improve as a handicapper. And that's ultimately what the goal of this show is. It's what the goal of this show has always been. And I feel like we do a pretty good job. Let's take a look at the NBA card for tonight. Give you a few examples here from the situational betting article that I wrote up. How about this game between the Sacramento Kings and the Detroit Pistons? Pistons 5-point favorites here in this one. Obviously, it's been a pretty challenging year for them. But this is the third game in 4 nights for Sacramento. Played in Memphis on Friday, in Chicago on Saturday. They play the Cleveland Cavaliers on Wednesday night to start a stretch of 5 games in 7 days. 8-game road trip for Sacramento. So, as I said in my situational piece, they're a team that shows up quite a bit here in terms of this article. But, you know, the big thing for Sacramento here, you have to consider these types of things. This will be their first game in the Eastern time zone on this trip. So that's a really big problem for them. You know, you start playing in these different time zones. It's not just about jet lag then. You know, you've got to get accustomed to a different rhythm, different start times, all this type of stuff. It can be very, very challenging. Now, maybe they're getting a little bit of a bump because they played pretty well in Chicago on Saturday, only lost by 3 as a 6.5-point dog. But I think this is a terrible spot for Sacramento. Also, no Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay, torn Achilles, done for the season. Maybe Sacramento's rallied for a couple of games here, but eventually you're going to get to a point where DeMarcus Cousins is really the only guy that can score for this team, though, at least on a consistent basis. So you start making your adjustments, and you look at these situational spots. We're talking about a team with an 8-game road trip from January 20th to January 31st without its second-best player. Depth takes a big hit. You've got guys playing minutes that aren't generally accustomed to playing that kind of workload. That's really, really significant. So I think as this road trip goes on, you're going to start paying some bigger prices here to fade the Kings. But I think tonight's a really good spot to do it. Playing up at the Palace of Auburn Hills, not going to be a whole lot of crowd. Probably won't be a very big buzz in the building for that one. Detroit should be in pretty good shape there as a 5-point favorite. They've kind of turned some things around a little bit here over the last few games. Couple covers, 3-game winning streak. You know, you look for these things. You look for ebbs and flows in the NBA. We talked about playing on streaks with Philip Rosenreich last week and whether or not that's a thing in the NBA. And he said he thought it was. Now, it's obviously not a be-all, end-all. But when you've got teams that are feeling pretty good about themselves and you get a reasonable number like this, I think it's a good spot to pounce. San Antonio Spurs and the Brooklyn Nets. How about this one? Brooklyn, an 11-point underdog at home in this one, but this is the penultimate sandwich spot for the San Antonio Spurs. They play the Cavs on Saturday night, played very well in that game. That was a back-and-forth type of affair. That one was pretty much everything that we expected it to be. Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James going at it head-to-head. Spurs come away with that win, a nice 3-point victory as a 4-point underdog, so an outright upset winner there. Greg Popovich was pretty upset with how the team played against Denver. They played a strong second half and covered. So maybe they are riding a little bit of that wave. But they play Toronto tomorrow night. Now, the Spurs are not one of those teams that really concerns itself with these measuring stick types of games. You know, you got a team like Golden State. They want to go out there and win every game, especially against the elite teams. You got teams like Cleveland and San Antonio, more big picture oriented. You know, the Cavs just want to get to June. San Antonio just needs to get to May and then see what happens in the playoff chase. This looks like a bad spot for them. This looks like a very bad spot for them. Now, of course, a couple of things about situational spots and bad teams. One of the primary ones is that sometimes the spot doesn't matter. Sometimes the team is just that bad that there's nothing you can do about it. And we've had some of those here this year. Particularly, we've had some of those here recently. But for Brooklyn tonight, Tony Parker's banged up. Pau Gasol's out for the Spurs as well. Brooklyn wants to run the floor. They want to get up and down the court. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you wonder how invested the Spurs are going to be in this game tonight. Now, of course, the difference here is that Brooklyn plays at a high tempo. What happens when you play at a high tempo is if you're not very good, you give a good opponent the opportunity to have even more edges over you throughout the game. I mean, think about it. Let's say the Brooklyn Nets played at a pace like the Utah Jazz. Well, the Brooklyn Nets aren't very good offensively. So if they're playing a limited number of possessions, there are fewer instances for the opposition to take advantage. With Brooklyn playing at the fastest pace in the NBA, there's a lot of opportunities for their team to take advantage. If San Antonio's invested, they should win this game big. If they're not, Brooklyn can hang around. So we'll see what happens in terms of this game. I certainly think there's a chance Brooklyn gets beaten by 20 or 25, but I also think there's a chance this game is too close for comfort for the Spurs. So I feel like with Brooklyn catching double digits at home, this may be a spot to take a shot there on the Brooklyn Nets. A couple of other games that fall into the criteria for the situational article here today. This game between Houston and Milwaukee, And this is a really good example, because when I was looking at this game on Saturday night when I wrote up this article, it looked like it would be a good spot for Milwaukee. Fourth game in 6 nights for Houston. Third game in 4 nights. They played Golden State at home on Friday and then Memphis on Saturday. They got blown out by Golden State at home. Had a really nice bounce back effort against Memphis on Saturday night. So it looked like a good spot to fade the Rockets. You know, back-to-back tough games against conference opponents, against better conference opponents. They beat Milwaukee by 19 when they met last Wednesday. So what's Houston's incentive? But Milwaukee's dropped 5 straight. This number opened Houston -4.5. It's up to 5.5 out there in the marketplace. I agree with the line move here in this one. And that's what you want to do. You know, you circle these spots, and I circled this spot. I said, this is a spot where I want to look to play on Milwaukee. Then you get the numbers. You see how these teams have come together here over the last few games. And you have to be flexible. You have to be malleable. You have to have the opportunity to change your mind if the numbers dictate it. The numbers dictate it for this game. You know, Milwaukee is not defending right now. They've given up over 111 points per game in their last 5 games. What do we know about Houston? They score, and they score a lot. Now, of course, this could be a high-variance game. Houston shoots a lot of threes. Maybe they don't fall in Milwaukee. That's certainly a possibility. So maybe not the best of spots, but again, this is the way that you want to be breaking down these games, especially in the NBA, because the NBA market is very, very difficult. It's a high-variance league in the sense that sometimes teams play, sometimes they don't. Sometimes players are injured. Sometimes they play through it. Sometimes they don't, all that type of thing. But that's what makes it such a challenging market. So you want to look for each and every edge that you possibly can and then try to play on those when you get the opportunity. Let's move over to the NHL side here, because I think that, you know, when you look at the NHL, this is something that our listeners said they want a little bit more content on. And of course, we had Rob Pizzola talk about it on Friday's show. I'll give you some thoughts here as well as we move forward a little bit. Looking at tonight, now we've got 6 games tonight. 3 of them wound up on my situational card in terms of the article. There are only 4 days of NHL games here this week. So that throws another wrinkle in. When you talk about the monotony of these daily winter leagues, whether it's college basketball, the NHL, the NBA, you know, sometimes teams just have these ebbs and flows, these ups and downs where you may have a one-off game and that happens. But in the NHL this week, you've got the All-Star break coming up. So that's yet another consideration is if you've got a team that's maybe played with a lot of injured players this year, maybe they've got a lot of guys going to the All-Star game. There's some look-ahead factor there. Not necessarily tonight or tomorrow night, but I think Wednesday and Thursday night, you run into some situations where these teams are looking ahead to that break. I mean, it's a long season. It's a very, very long season. You know, there's a lot of travel involved there. Hockey, you know, I mean, you can take a few possessions off in basketball, and then you can take a shift or two off here in hockey, but it's really a max effort sport, and it's a very physical game. Basketball, you know, maybe not so much. College basketball, these kids are playing 2-3 games a week, at most 3 games a week, generally 2 games a week. You know, so there's some leeway there. There's some recovery time. In the NHL, there really isn't a whole lot of recovery time. So when you talk about getting the chance to get away from the rink, get a little bit of a break, that's something that teams certainly look forward to. Maybe some of these players take the weekend, go to a beach with their families, whatever the case may be. There is some look-ahead factor here this week, and maybe I'll get a chance to talk about that as the week goes on here. But a few games that are on the radar for tonight. How about this one between the Los Angeles Kings and the New York Rangers? The New York Rangers have been one of the best teams in the NHL here throughout the season, but they're struggling a little bit here of late. A lot of high-scoring games. They're not getting a whole lot of great goaltending from Henrik Lundqvist. Maybe we start to see Antti Raanta play even more than he's already been playing. But that's what's so hard about the NHL. Is it really hard to keep up a high pace? The Rangers were at an unsustainably high pace. This was a team that led the league in goal scoring by a pretty wide margin. That's not the composition of this roster. That's not what they're designed to do. Give Alain Vigneault a lot of credit. Give the star players for this team a lot of credit. But you had to expect some regression coming here in the near future. Now, the Rangers have won 2 straight, but they're now 4th in the Metropolitan Division behind Washington, Columbus, and Pittsburgh. So when I look at this game tonight against the Kings, you know, it's a back-to-back for the Kings, which is – or actually, it's not a back-to-back. They played Saturday against the Islanders. Today is the front end of a back-to-back. They play New Jersey tomorrow night. It's a back-to-back for the Rangers. They played in Detroit last night. Now they're coming back home. You know, so I feel like this is a good spot for the Rangers. They got a confidence-building win over Detroit. Detroit's a pretty bad team. You come back to home ice against the team. Here's one of the things I want you to keep in mind. When you talk about long road trips in any sport, and this is something that's especially relevant in baseball, which I'll talk about once we get into that, a lot of players will say the harder game of a long trip is the second game, not the first game, because you've got adrenaline to carry you through the first game and you know, all that type of thing. But here, the Kings had a day off in the New York area yesterday. So now, you know, your schedule's completely thrown off. You're getting up late in the morning because you've got the time difference, you know, just all these different things that go into it. So the second game, generally the more challenging one for a lot of these teams. And of course, Los Angeles just lost to the Islanders, and the Islanders are not a good team. So I think the Rangers are in good shape here tonight. I'm surprised at the line. I'm surprised at the line move. The Rangers are only a minus 125 favorite, but you got to like them here in this spot. I know it's a back-to-back, but the Rangers are a much better team, particularly on offense, than the Kings are. So I think the Rangers are a good look tonight, probably my favorite play in the NHL. A little bit worried about the steam coming in on Los Angeles, but not so much. You know, sometimes you just have a difference of opinion, and that's something that you need to take into consideration. How about this game tonight between San Jose and Colorado? San Jose opened a minus 235 favorite at bookmaker for this game when the numbers came out. Now, San Jose is down to a $2 favorite on the road. And this is not a play on Colorado. This is strictly a numbers play. Colorado is terrible. They've dropped 5 straight, 9 of their last 10. But for San Jose here tonight, 5th game in 8 nights, they're playing in altitude. They just played San Jose on Saturday, and San Jose was a minus 340 favorite when that game closed. And actually, Colorado turned to overtime. It was a 3-2 loss for the Avalanche. They did pick up a point there in that one. But you look at how things set up here. 5th game in 8 nights in the high altitude. All-star break on the horizon. San Jose plays in Winnipeg tomorrow night, which, by the way, I probably won't get a chance to talk NHL on tomorrow's show. That is my favorite spot of the week, is to look to fade the San Jose Sharks tomorrow night in Winnipeg. 6th game in 9 nights. And a back-to-back coming off the altitude. The Jets are going to be favored by a lot more than you would think here in this game. I think I underestimated the line in my article, but that's a really, really interesting spot and a very, very bad spot for San Jose. Even if they lose tonight and it becomes a bounce-back spot, it's still a really terrible spot for the Sharks. But these are the things that you want to look for, you know, and part of the problem is that a lot of people are going to look at that Colorado plus 190, plus 195 line and say, you know, they're not going to win that game. More often than not, they're not going to win that game. It's just a fact. But again, it circles back to what I talked about earlier in the show about this being a game of math. You have good odds on Colorado at plus 195. Even now at plus 180, I think there's a decent price on Colorado. Are they going to win that game all that often? No, probably not. But the spot sets up really, really well for them. And you're probably above the break-even percentage of playing a plus 180 line. So, you know, I think in that respect, that's the way that you have to break down these money line sports, and especially spots like this. You know, a lot of times people talk about it. The value in money line sports generally tends to be on the underdog. That's just the way it is. It's just the nature of the beast. And this is probably one of those examples where, you know, the value is on the underdog. It's a hard bet to make. Don't get me wrong. It's a very, very hard bet to make. But if you're able to do it, if you have wherewithal to make that play, you know, you're going to endure your share of losses, but you should also be able to get your share of wins as well. And those wins should be enough to get you over the break-even point. So that's just a few thoughts there for the NHL, also for the NBA. A couple of other things I want to mention here. Head on over to bangthebook.com. Check out all those sportsbook reviews that we have. There's lots of good stuff there, talking about customer service elements, deposit options, withdrawal options. You know, some books have dime lines on hockey. Some books have dime lines for baseball, that type of thing. Those things are mentioned over there in those sportsbook reviews at bangthebook.com. And all of those books offer exclusive deposit codes for our Bang the Book radio listeners. The one that we always talk about here on the show, DSI Sportsbook. If you use that BTB radio promo code, they'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, no strings attached, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other option over at DSI Sportsbook is our Bang 200 promo code. You get 100% bonus for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino. But keep that in mind. I know that people may be a little bit skeptical of the offshore industry and be worried about having their money at a few different places, and I certainly understand that. When you talk about this time of year with prop bets are going to differ quite a bit from book to book. So you want to make sure that you're able to shop around for the best price. And the only way that you're able to do that is to have multiple outs at your disposal. So if you don't have an account over at DSI, I would recommend checking them out. If you do, check out our sportsbook reviews. See if there are some other books that may work for you. Go ahead and bring another voice onto the show here. That is Mr. Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
No complaints from me here on this Monday morning. How about yourself, Adam?
No complaints here either. It's a little bit tough to get to get a quick fill-in here for the Monday shows with people coming out of the weekend and all that. So hopefully our listeners were okay with me talking for a while there, but hopefully I shared some good information, and I know that we're going to share some very good information here during our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. Before we get into the college basketball side, I just want to get your take here on the line for Super Bowl 51. New England, 3-point favorite, highest total we've ever seen for a Super Bowl at 58.5. And of course, this number's kind of bounced around a little bit in terms of action on the over since it opened.
Yeah, I mean, you had to know that there was going to be action on the over as soon as this one came out. I think the side is a very fair line at 3. New England has to be the favorite here based on what they've done in the past. Belichick and Brady have been so good in this spot. But, you certainly can't sleep on a team like Atlanta the way they've been playing. Obviously, I think both teams can put up a decent amount of points. I think the Patriots' defense is a good defense. I just don't think they're a great defense. Pittsburgh had more chances than what the final score would indicate yesterday. And then obviously losing Le'Veon Bell early in the game hurt them a lot. So, I haven't handicapped the game too much right now. There's no big value on the line, as you would expect in a Super Bowl. But, I think it certainly should be a good game.
Well, and that brings up an entirely different argument. And this is one that you and I have talked about before. And it's hard because everybody wants action on this game. But if you've been following the NFL market, if you've been following the industry, that there's, generally speaking, not a whole lot of value on either the side or the total in a standalone game like this. Of course, you can include props, but you can't really have them tracked on any of the sites that you're on. So is this one of the more frustrating, couple of weeks for you in terms of being a professional handicapper?
Yeah, it's going to be hard for sure. I'm probably going to have to release a play of some kind on this one. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be one of my low-rated plays. It's just, there's not going to be a big play to be had here. But like you said, there is going to be so many people that want the action that I have to put something out there. It's a spot where I certainly think there's more value in the props than there are on the actual line. But like you said, the props can't be tracked the same way. And it's understandable. That's the way it works. It's something that, I've kind of gotten used to once you get to this time of the year in any sport, really. Once you get the final game of the year, you're not going to find the big value that you do when you have a bunch of games to pick from. So that's the way it is. And, we'll see what I can find as far as a little bit of value here. But I will say, I think that Matt Ryan and the Falcons have certainly played extremely well here in the playoffs. Yesterday's win over the Packers. I know the Packers' secondary was banged up, and it's easy to say, well, the Packers' defense just wasn't very good. And that almost takes a little bit away from Matt Ryan and the Falcons. I feel like this is a team that nobody's really trusted here throughout the course of the season. And I read that they were actually 100-1 at one point to win the Super Bowl, which if you got them at 100-1, props to you, and then you can hedge out. But I think that you know, the 3-point line shows that they are starting to get some more respect here, because even a team like New England isn't favored by a huge amount against them, and I think that's fair.
Well, let's move over to the college basketball side here, and something I want to touch on before we get into the notes and the talking points that you sent over to me. We have no meaningful football game this week for the first time since August. So people are going to be looking for something to bet on. I would assume college basketball probably comes to the forefront because just a lot more games, a lot more opportunities. You know, people know that the NBA market is a tough nut to crack. This is something that we talked about a few weeks ago, something we can revisit a little bit here now. But for those listeners that are maybe going to dive a little bit more into college basketball with no football to worry about for a couple of weeks, what would you recommend to them?
First and foremost, if you're just diving into it now, specialization is the best thing you can do, because it's going to be hard for you to have a big edge on the market unless you specialize in one conference. The smaller the conference, the better. You know, if you can specialize in a conference like the SoCon or the Big West, the Big Sky, something like that, you know, if you're near that conference, if you can follow a lot of the beat writers on Twitter, things like that, you can get a good knowledge of these smaller schools pretty quickly, and you can find some edges. I think that's the best thing you can do. I think the worst thing you can do is make just way too many bets. You try to dive in head first. These lines get sharper as the year goes in college basketball too. And, you know, I can point out some stats for the year in college basketball that would point that out. You know, I mean, the oddsmakers are really good at their job. Favorites are hitting 50.6% of the time. Dogs, 49.4% of the time. The over is now 50.07%, and the under is 49.93%. That's 1,055 overs and 1,052 unders. So, you know, obviously, you need to find an edge somewhere. You can't just blindly be betting something that you know, looks like a popular bet. And at this time of the year, the other thing that I would caution you, we've talked about this before, don't go off what you remember from last year. You know, what you remember from last March doesn't mean much at all right now. So do your research and see what these teams are like this season.
Well, I think it's interesting. You mentioned that the over and the under almost 50-50 for the entire season, but over the last 3-4 weeks or so, that really hasn't been the case.
No, not at all. Consistently here lately, the over has really been crushing it. 55.33% last week. Yeah, the beat goes on here. The over's on a huge run, and you have to say there were a lot of overtime games last week, so that certainly has something to do with it, but it's not the entire story. You know, I think that, you know, it's just consistently been an issue here. There's a lot of fouling at the end of these games. You know, if it's a 10 or 11-point game with a minute left, most teams are fouling. You know, in an NBA game, that doesn't happen. You know, NBA teams know when to stop a little bit better than these college teams do. And these games can really just run along here for a while at the end of the game. And that can, it's amazing how many points they can put up at the end of the game if it's in that fouling range. So one of the things that I'm trying to do, and one of the things I would suggest is to be careful with those unders in the spread range of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 points, because that's sitting right in that range where, you know, you could get a pretty epic foul fest.
Well, and I saw that over the last couple of days, you've been sort of voicing some of your frustration and lamenting some of the losses on Twitter. And I immediately figured that we would start off the show today by looking at how the over has done pretty well, because it seems to go hand in hand for you. You know, you are your area of expertise, certainly in totals. You do look for a lot of under opportunities, and when the over is hitting, I mean, it's just the way it is. There's a lot of variance when it comes to college basketball.
Yeah, I've had a really bad week the last week in college basketball, the worst week I've had this year, no doubt. You know, I built up a really nice cushion as far as positive units, and that's most of the way gone now. So that's certainly a bummer. It's no fun. You know, I've been open and forthright about it. And, you know, yeah, unders have burnt me quite a bit, but you know, one day that really bothered me quite a bit was Saturday, where I had really bad and I played almost all overs, and I went back and looked on Saturday. I thought, well, maybe it was an under day. There were actually more overs that day. I just seemed to find all the unders, and you know, it happens sometimes. You know, there were a lot of close losses in there, a lot of 0.5-point, 1-point losses. Those kind of things should even out in the long run. I actually had USC and Arizona State over yesterday, and they had 161 with 110 left, and they didn't score a point in the last 110 of the three-point game. That was a rough push, you know. A tough push is certainly not as bad as a bad beat, but still not much fun. And, you know, just something to keep in mind that when you're playing quite a few games, and my volume's not quite as high as it was last year, but when you're playing quite a few games, you're going to always hit one of these stretches where you have a really bad day or a really bad 2 or 3 days where it costs you quite a few units. And certainly frustrating, but it's something you have to be prepared for, and you have to use that good bankroll management to be ready for that.
Yeah, and of course, one of the things that we preach on this show is patience, because this is not a get-rich-quick thing. This is a long-term thing. If you find something that works for you, if you find someone that works for you as a professional handicapper, you've got to stay on for the long haul, because there is variance. There are, you know, sometimes you'll go 5-15, other times you'll go 20-5, and it's just the way that it goes. But the people that have success with this are long-term winners. You don't want to buy into the short-term streaks, all that kind of thing. And I think this is probably a good time to remind people of that.
Absolutely. You know, you do your research, whether it's me or any other handicapper in the industry, you do your research and see how well they've done in the long term. That's by far the most important. You know, if they've won 5 games in a row, that doesn't really mean much. If they've won 5 years in a row, that means a lot. So keep that in mind as you look at it. One thing I wanted to point out here as far as you want me to just head on through the quick hitters now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to point out, I was kind of looking at this the other day, and I thought this would be a good thing to point out, is don't forget to handicap defensive field goal percentage, defensive efficiency. I know it sounds pretty ridiculous to even have to say that, but, you know, I know a lot of people who don't really look too much at defensive stats before they make bets in college basketball or the NBA for that matter. That's definitely a mistake. Right now I want to look at the top 10 teams in the country in defensive field goal percentage. They're combined 104-60 against the spread. That's 63.41%. Now, this certainly isn't to say that you should just blindly bet teams with the best defensive numbers, because now if you start betting on these teams that are the top 10 defenses in college basketball, the odds makers are going to be really high on. There's teams like Virginia, Gonzaga, teams like that in the top 10 on defensive field goal percentage. So, you know, you're not going to get a good value necessarily with them now. But I do suggest that you should start handicapping any game with defensive efficiency numbers first before offensive efficiencies. You know, even when you're looking at those under-the-radar games, this is something you want to look at right away. You know, you really don't want to be laying points, especially with a team that doesn't have a good defense at all. You know, that team that gets a big lead with a poor defense gives back that lead a lot more often than one of those teams that has a solid defense. You can build up that lead. You know, they're not going to give up those wide open jumpers. So that's just something to keep in mind moving forward.
Well, they say defense travels, right? So, and we talk all the time about shooting backdrops, and especially when we talk about conference tournaments and things of that sort. You know, we like to look at those teams that are going to struggle because they rely so much on jump shooting, and it just becomes a problem when you're out there traveling from place to place, day to day. It's really, really challenging. So, you know, that's definitely something really important to keep in mind here, and I'm glad that you brought that up today. And I think an example of this TCU-Oklahoma State game, you know, I was kind of looking at that number, and I was sort of trying to figure out if it was one that I liked. It's a game that I previewed over at bangthebook.com. But TCU is dramatically better defensively, even though Oklahoma State's a team that can run it up there in the upper 80s, low 90s offensively. But to see that number where it is with Oklahoma State's home court advantage, TCU, you know, kind of overachieving a little bit during a weak non-conference, I think that kind of underscores what you're talking about in terms of, you know, these teams that play good defense are getting respect from the odds makers.
Yeah, that's an interesting game, by the way. You know, TCU not catching very many points, like you say, that's a little bit surprising. And then you see the total open at 161, and as we're talking right now, 155.5, 99% of the money right now on the under. That's really interesting. People obviously thinking that TCU is going to be able to slow down Oklahoma State. I think that's certainly an interesting line, and I have to say, Jamie Dixon's done a really good job there at TCU. This is a program that's really struggled in the past, had a lot of losing seasons. I don't think they're quite as good as their record, but they're certainly much improved. So hats off to TCU for a really good start to the season. There's several injury notes that I wanted to point out here for this week. Now, I try to kind of gloss over the big-name injuries because I know everybody's heard about them, but I do want to give a quick mention to a few right here. Maurice Watson Jr. for Creighton out for the year. That was just a huge hit for the Creighton team. They lost Saturday against Marquette right after that. You know, Creighton's still going to be a pretty good team, so I don't want you to think that Creighton's going to just completely fall off. But, you know, Watson was their best player. He kind of ran the show for them. It's going to be a really tough one for them. OG and Anunoby.
Hang on 1 second. Kyle, let me ask you this. In terms of Watson, how many points did you adjust your Creighton number for that?
You know, that's a really tough one because Creighton has so many other guys outside of him that are good players, but I don't think they have anybody that fits the same role as him very well. 3 points is the adjustment that I made for Watson. That's a pretty big adjustment for one player.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
So Indiana, that's a big loss with Anunoby out. You know, I think that, you know, he's so athletic. He's pretty good on both ends. Indiana's a tough team for me to get a read on every single year. They're so inconsistent with Tom Crean. They can beat anybody. They can lose to anybody. I don't like backing teams like that very often. You know, I like to know what I'm going to get. And then Quentin Snyder out for a couple weeks at Louisville. Louisville's played fine without him. Patino's doing a really good job coaching up this team. They're 12-5 against the spread this year. I think they'll be okay, but certainly they have a higher upside with Quentin Snyder. And then, you know, looking at under the radar, let's touch on these a little bit more in depth. Ohio's Antonio Campbell out for the year. You know, there's no way I can overstate how much this means for this team. Campbell's the best player in the Mid-American Conference. Ohio won on the road at Northern Illinois Saturday, but expectations definitely need to be adjusted for them now. I'm going to look to fade Ohio here coming up in the next few games. We'll see if we can find a spot to fade them. You know, I know Ohio can still play decent defense, and they're not a bad team now. But when you lose a guy who's the best player in the MAC, it's going to hurt you quite a bit.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And here's another question. You know, this guy's a 6'9 player. He's down on the interior, very efficient player, although he can jump out and shoot a little bit. He's a 36% three-point shooter. Do you make more of an adjustment when you're talking about a player that's he's more of an interior guy than an exterior guy playing out on the perimeter? Do you make more of an adjustment for that? Because teams that lose a big man probably have to resort to more jump shots, right? So that makes them a higher variance team.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously a team like Ohio doesn't have as many good players as a team like Creighton. Now, Antonio Campbell's probably not as good of a player overall as Maurice Watson Jr., but Campbell playing in a weaker conference where he's the best player in that conference. So, you know, for Ohio, I've had a hard time trying to figure out how much I'm going to take off of Ohio. For now, I've made it 4.5 points, and that's a really big adjustment for one player. But Campbell, the offense runs through him. Yes, I mean, you're right. They definitely have to take a lot more jump shots. Ohio is pretty good at jump shots, and they have several guys who can knock down threes. But when you're going to have to rely on those more, I think it's going to be quite a bit harder for them.
Is that a situation where maybe you'd be more inclined to fade them on the road, knowing that they will have to take more jump shots in an unfamiliar setting?
Yeah, especially when you find a team that's a good defensive team that they're going to play against. You know, and there are stats out there that can help you find out pretty quick teams that are good at defending the three-point shot. And, you know, teams that are just good at making you take those tough jump shots instead of getting to the basket. Those shots are harder to make on the road where you're not used to the sight lines and things like that. So, yeah, it's certainly something that I would look to do more often. I think Ohio will still beat some good teams at home. Ohio has plenty of talent to be able to do that, but I think they're going to lose a lot more games now than they would have, certainly. The next one I wanted to say was Portland, Alec Wintering. He's out for the year. You know, Portland's really been struggling a lot lately. They lost that game 74-33 to St. Mary's. And then the next game they come back and lose just a heartbreaker at the buzzer against Loyola Marymount. It's just been downhill for them the last few games. I don't think Portland's going to be doing very well the rest of this year without Wintering. This is a guy that was kind of set up everything for them, you know, heart and soul of the team. Now they don't really have any playmaker here. I think Terry Porter will do a good job at Portland in the long run, but I wouldn't expect much out of them the rest of this year.
Well, and here's another thing. I mean, obviously you take away Wintering, and he's scoring almost 20 points per game, leading assist guy. He's up there in rebounds as well. But this is a kid that plays 37 minutes per game for Portland out of a 40-minute game. So that inherently leads to a bigger adjustment than a player of that stature on another team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Portland has been struggling quite a bit with scoring, and I've watched a couple of Portland's games. Wintering has had to do a lot for them. So 5-point adjustment for me for Portland. And, you know, as we talk about these adjustments, I have to say, these are not adjustments that I make very often. You know, usually you're talking about a point or two when it comes to a player, even when they are pretty good players. But in these situations, it's been warranted to make a big adjustment. Portland, it's really, you know, I'm not going to want to back them at all coming up in the near term. It's going to be hard to tell where their offense comes from and who sets everything up for them. I don't really think they have a good backup for Wintering, and that's certainly something to consider when you're looking at how much to adjust a team. BYU's Nick Emery, questionable for next game at Santa Clara. Emery is the second most important player on this team behind Eric Mika. He has the ball in his hands a lot. BYU is certainly not as good as they were the past couple seasons. You know, they're not a bad team, but the drop-off from Gonzaga and St. Mary's right now is very, very big. I think the WCC is going to get a lot better here over the next few years, but Gonzaga and St. Mary's are just too good for everybody else this season. And I think BYU is going to be a tough team to back if Emery's not playing, so definitely keep an eye on that injury.
Well, we've been talking throughout our segments here about home court advantage in certain conferences. We've kind of been bouncing around a little bit. There really hasn't been a pattern necessarily. So today we're going to look at the SEC, which, you know, the SEC is Kentucky and everybody else, and we're seeing that play out here again this year. But there are some intriguing home court advantages here in this conference, beginning with the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, I give Arkansas 5.5 points. Arkansas is a team where, you know, the data actually suggests that you give them more than 5.5 points. And this is tough for me because in a big conference, I really don't give people even 5.5 points very often at all. Arkansas, though, the way they play makes it a little bit more warranted for them. Their style of play with the 40 minutes of hell and the defense that just makes you really, really worn out. They play really fast. Road teams are quicker to wear out from the press than if you're playing at home. There's no doubt about that. It makes the home court advantages bigger. And Arkansas has been so bad on the road in the past that sometimes they've been blown out on the road, and it sets up a nice play for them at home at a discount. I will say the road play this year has been quite a bit better, which has negated some of that value. And Arkansas, actually, I gave them 6 points a couple years ago for home court advantage, and now 5.5. I think 6 was just a little bit too much. But Arkansas is certainly a really good home court advantage.
Well, and it's tough to look at something like that in the SEC because, you know, and this is a note that you talk about as well here, and we'll get to it in a second. But first and foremost, this is a football conference. So do you find it more challenging to set some of those home court advantages just because the fan bases don't show up quite as much as they do in some of the other conferences?
Yeah, there's a lot of average home court advantages in the SEC. Not too many bad ones, but there's a lot of average ones. And, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because what you're looking for is a program that still gets a lot, you know, the basketball fans come out because there are quite a few schools here where nobody cares too much about basketball. They're just waiting for next football season. So that's certainly something that goes into it. Now, the ones that I'm talking about here that have a good home court advantage all have some pretty good fan bases. Tennessee, the second one, 4.5 points. Tennessee certainly has a good home court advantage. They get a lot better support from than the average SEC Hoops team. There's no doubt about that. Phil, you know, our good friend Rick Barnes is the head coach there, and I'm rarely interested in backing the Volunteers, always looking for spots to go against them. And as I've said in the past, I still think there's value in fading them in the second half, especially when they have leads. Tennessee, though, does get 4.5 points for home court advantage for me.
Oh, Rick Barnes, our old buddy. I'm glad we finally found a way to beat him up a little bit here, even if it was just in passing. And I'm sure that we'll have some opportunities in the future as we keep moving forward. We're going to stay in the Volunteer State for another pretty strong home court advantage. This one's down in Nashville.
Yeah, Vanderbilt 4.5 points. Now, all you have to do is watch one game at Vanderbilt, and you can tell that it's just a really awkward court. And for the home team, that's a good thing. You know, if you've ever played basketball, you go into a new place, and it's just so much different than the average court. It's tough to shoot there. The sight lines are difficult. And that's the way it is at Memorial Gym in Nashville. When things are different than what you're used to, it's going to help the home team. The Commodores are very accustomed to these types of things, while opponents aren't at all. One thing I'll say is I like to fade young teams going to Vanderbilt since they have a lot of players who have never played there before. The more experienced players are teams that have a lot of juniors and seniors that have already gone to Nashville and played Vanderbilt, it's a little bit harder to fade them.
Well, and as you said, we got a lot of average home court advantages here. Do you have some that are a little bit lower than the average, though?
A couple I have. Auburn and Texas A&M at 3 points. Two spots where football is definitely loved a lot more than basketball, and the home team doesn't get the boost that you might expect. Texas A&M is a great home field advantage in football. That doesn't really translate to basketball. And then Auburn has really not had much success over the long term in college basketball. Bruce Pearl trying to bring them back up a little bit, but, you know, not a team that really gets a lot of fan support. And, you know, like we said, in the SEC, that's actually fairly common in that, you know, basketball isn't exactly loved the same way football is there. And, you know, a lot of conferences, obviously there's more love for college football than there is for basketball, but I think it's more pronounced here in the SEC than most places.
Well, we'll look ahead at some games here. This will include a premium look ahead for one of Kyle's premium selections, and, you know, we'll have to see if the numbers line up for that one. But first, we're going to start in the Big 12, Kansas State and Iowa State. What is it that piques your interest about this game?
Well, it's an interesting spot for both teams. Now, first of all, Kansas State certainly surprised me this year. They've been really good. They've always been solid on defense under Bruce Weber. This year, their offensive efficiency numbers are way up. They're getting to the line a lot, attacking the basket. Iowa State coming off a double overtime win at Oklahoma. Quick turnaround for them there Tuesday. Oklahoma also in an interesting spot here tonight if you hear this on Monday. You know, Iowa State-Oklahoma was really a crazy game. Goes into double overtime. Starters played a lot of minutes there. Kansas State, though, coming off a huge win over West Virginia. Hilton Coliseum is so tough. You know, really good home court advantage. One note I wanted to make, Monty Morris is one of the most underrated players in the country. This is a guy who does not turn the ball over. He has the ball in his hands all the time, doesn't turn it over, sets his teammates up really well. And he's also shooting 40% from long range this year. Certainly think he's very underrated. You know, I don't know which side I'd want to take in this one. I just think it's an interesting spot for both of them. I don't like going against Iowa State in Ames because – I mean, crazy things happen. There's definitely Hilton magic. I just think that it's harder for me to go against Kansas State, though, than it was in the past because Kansas State's proven that they can play well on the road also. I mean, they almost won it at Kansas, and they may have had a chance to do so if it weren't for some bad officiating. So Kansas State's proven themselves as well, but you hate to go against Iowa State at home.
I don't want to dive too deep into a rabbit hole here, but – what are your overall impressions of the Big 12? Because Kansas 7-0, Baylor 6-1. Of course, Baylor got blown out by West Virginia, which is a thing that happens with the style of basketball that West Virginia plays. But a lot of teams kind of hovering there in the middle, 4-3, 3-4, that type of area. Does anybody actually separate themselves from the pack in this league?
Well, I mean, I think Kansas is probably the only team that has much of a shot to win at all, to cut down the nets in early April in the Big 12, but there's quite a few teams who are on the rise, in my opinion, here. There are a lot of good coaches in this conference. You know, West Virginia is a team that I'd be hesitant to back later in the year. West Virginia's had some quick outs in the NCAA tournament in the past, and I think it kind of is because of the way they play. West Virginia's offense is a little bit inconsistent. That press works well, but they foul a lot, and they put the opposition on the line a ton. That can really hurt them. You know, Baylor, you have to give them credit for the way they've been playing. Iowa State's a good team. And I love Monty Morris, but there's not a ton of help around him. I don't think Iowa State's a team that can make a deep run. I think the Big 12, there are a lot of good teams in the Big 12, not many teams that are great. Kansas and Baylor, the top two teams there, and Kansas has the most talent here, no doubt. Kansas hasn't been quite as good on defense this year as some of the other years, so I don't think the difference between Kansas and the rest of the teams has been that big so far, but I think the potential for Kansas is a lot higher than the other teams.
Well, now we'll go to the possible premium look-ahead pick for Kyle. This game comes Wednesday night in the Summit League between IUPUI and Fort Wayne.
Yeah, I like this one quite a bit, and I take some pretty extensive notes as I look through college basketball and all sports, honestly. You know, you have to mark down things that you want to remember for the future. And IUPUI won both games in this rivalry last year. These two teams don't like each other at all. You know, this is one where IUPUI won at Fort Wayne last January. The players danced on the Mastodon at midcourt, and their head coach joined them, dancing around on the midcourt spot. And that didn't go over too well, obviously. Then in the game at IUPUI, some really strange things happened. IUPUI won a really close, hard-fought game, and immediately after the game, Jason Gardner, the coach at IUPUI, jumped up on top of the scorer's table and started shouting obscenities at Fort Wayne's players and the coaching staff. And obviously, I mean, you don't hear about that very often. That's not something that happens very often in college sports, and that's about as classless as you get. You better believe Fort Wayne's going to be motivated for this game. Fort Wayne's lost three straight games. They come back home after a tough road trip, and they definitely have a higher upside. And I think that this could be a good buy-low spot for Fort Wayne. And also, I mean, if they're not motivated for this game, you have to wonder when they would ever be motivated. I think this is one of those spots where certainly it's not always going to win, but if you find spots like this consistently, you back a team like Fort Wayne in this spot, you're going to win more often than you lose. Double revenge for them and some extra motivation based on the antics of their opponent from last season. Fort Wayne's going to be favored in this game by several points, but I'm going to lay the points here with Fort Wayne.
Do you have a target number in mind?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's about six and a half points. It may be a little bit more than that, but you know, I would say that this probably goes somewhere between 5.5 and 7 points as far as laying it with Fort Wayne. And as long as it's not over 7, I'm going to lay the number here with Fort Wayne.
So we'll have to see. And, of course, you can reach out to Kyle at KyleHunterPicks on Twitter and see if it's still going to be something that is going to make his Wednesday card. How about we go to Thursday here? Let's go out to the Pac-12. Oregon and Utah, you've got some concerns about both teams in this game.
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky spot for Oregon. Utah has a great home court advantage. That elevation, as we've talked about in the past, is really tough. And then Dylan Brooks, with a sprained foot, probably not going to play in this game. It looks like he'll be out for a little while. Utah, though, has David Collette, who's one of their best players, questionable for this game. So you certainly want to know how he's doing before you bet this game. Another reason I wanted to talk about this one is just so we could talk a little bit in general about the Pac-12. You know, the Pac-12 is setting up to be a really exciting race here. Arizona going on the road and winning at UCLA. That was actually one of my good picks from this past weekend, and there weren't very many of them. I certainly had a bad weekend in college basketball. But I thought that was too many points for a team like Arizona to be getting at UCLA. Sean Miller's a better coach than Steve Alford. There's no doubt about that. And defense travels well. Arizona plays really good defense. Arizona has a high upside. You know, this is a team that really has had a lot of adversity this year, and now they're playing some extremely good basketball. And then obviously UCLA is a really good offense. They need to get better on defense if they're going to win it. You know, UCLA only about 100th in defensive efficiency this year. That's not going to cut it. Oregon's a team with a really high upside too, but they need Dylan Brooks to be healthy. Brooks is their go-to guy on offense. You know, Utah is a team that's certainly not as good as those other teams that we've been talking about. But like I said in the past, you know, Utah can knock off some really good teams at home. They have a good coach. They play pretty good defense. Utah's playing with a little bit more tempo than they have in the past. And as we've talked about with some of the other teams that play at elevation, I think that makes sense because it helps you when you're at elevation to play faster because the team runs out of gas a little bit quicker. So Utah's been playing well here lately. They just came off a couple big wins on the road, Washington State and Washington. Obviously, they're not good teams, those two. But they won very convincingly and covered the spread there. They also lost by 1 point at home to UCLA, and the game was back and forth the whole way. You know, Oregon probably be favored in this game, but not by very much. If Oregon is favored by very much, I'll look to go with Utah. But this is certainly an interesting game, and I think the Pac-12 is shaping up to be one of the most interesting races.
Looking ahead a little bit past this Oregon-Utah game, Oregon's got this altitude double header. They play at Colorado on Saturday. Colorado's been terrible in Pac-12 play. They're 0-7. I don't know if they're necessarily a live dog on Saturday, but is that a spot where you may look to take the Buffaloes?
No, I certainly would not take Oregon in that game. There's no way I would lay the points to Oregon. You know, Colorado's probably going to catch something like 5 or 6 points, maybe more than that based on how bad they've been, but Dylan Brooks being out would negate that somewhat. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of line the odds makers put out in that one. If they're laying more points than that, then I'll probably take Colorado. It's not something I can be too excited about, by the way, that Colorado's played. I did take Colorado in a similar spot like this a couple weeks ago when they were home against USC. They had a big lead in the first half and blew it and ended up losing at the end of the game. They've actually lost 3 straight games right at the end of the game. USC, they lost in overtime at Washington, then they lost in overtime at Washington State, which really shouldn't happen for a team like Colorado. So they're a little bit of a tough team to back right now, but they do get Oregon State at home on Thursday night, which should be a pretty comfortable win for them. And then they play Oregon, and they certainly would, you know, have that one marked on their calendar. They would love to pull off an upset win there.
One more game to look at here for this Handicapping the Hardwood segment. It's Saturday between Baylor and Ole Miss. And, you know, we talk about the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That takes place in the non-conference. The Big 12 SEC showdown takes place right in the middle of conference play, which for the life of me, I can't figure out.
No, I don't understand this one either. I never understood this one. Why would you want to do this? You take teams from your program or your conference and you send them out on a long road trip. And then a couple days later, they come back and have to play a big rival in their conference. It doesn't make much sense at all. There are a lot of interesting spots this weekend. Check out my article. It'll go up at bangthebook.com. I'm going to be writing that one here this afternoon. There's going to be quite a few interesting spots, and some of them will be from this Big 12 and SEC showdown. You know, Baylor plays at Ole Miss on Saturday. Baylor's going to be a substantial favorite here, maybe 9 or 10 points, something like that. And then the next game, they play at Kansas. So if you're thinking about this, if you're the Baylor Bears, which of those games would you overlook? Certainly not the Kansas game. So if you're going to have a game where you look past somebody, it would be this game. Ole Miss has an average home court advantage. Mississippi has a pretty good talent. DeAndre Burnett needs to be healthy. He played a little bit last game. If he's healthy and they're catching quite a few points, certainly would lean toward taking Mississippi in this one. You can't lay the points with Baylor in a spot like this.
Well, and that's what's so interesting is, you know, I mean, if you're Ole Miss, you have a chance to knock off a top 10 caliber team. And if you're Baylor, you have no incentive for this game whatsoever. You're just hoping to get out with a win. You don't care how it's done. You hope that you get out healthy because you play Kansas. There are not going to be too many worse spots, I think, over the next several weeks in college basketball than this one.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And, you know, Baylor's proven to be a pretty good road team this year. And so that would make people want to bet Baylor in a spot like this. You know, when Baylor's gone to Oklahoma and won by 26 points, they went to Kansas State and won by 9, went to TCU and won by 9. But this is a lot different spot, you know, like we're saying here. Why would you want to, you know, why are they going to be pumped up to win by 20 points at Ole Miss? I don't think they're going to be. I think if Baylor does end up winning and covering here on the road, it'll be solely because Mississippi had a really poor shooting effort or Mississippi wasn't ready to play. Although you have to think that if you're a team like Mississippi, you know, you should be excited for a game like this. Mississippi's 12-7 and probably not going to the NCAA tournament. This is one of those shots for them to pick up one of those really big home wins against a top 10 opponent. So you would think that Ole Miss would be invested in this game, and Baylor should be a lot less invested.
I think we had a lot of good thoughts on today's Handicapping the Hardwood segment with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, I'm going to be getting some stuff up there at the website on Super Bowl prop picks here in the next week and a half, so keep an eye out for that. Go to the site and sign up for the free picks newsletter if you haven't already. Got tied up this past weekend, wasn't able to send one of those out. We'll get back on that this week. 43-21, my last 64 free picks sent out by newsletter. And then also follow me on Twitter, at Kyle Hunter Picks. I'm going to be doing some contests for people to win premium plays, things like that moving forward. Should be some fun. So if you're not following me already, check me out there, at Kyle Hunter Picks.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Good stuff there from Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday show, our Tuesday meeting broadcast, we'll go hunting for winners with Sports Cheetah. Also welcome Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com. That'll do it for today. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.